911, what's your emergency?
Help! Apollo has blessed our podcast with the gift of prophecy. Ryan, how does it feel to be right about everything?
It feels correct.
I bet.
I feel like I have been validated, and honestly, like, it just, like, it's what I deserve, honestly. Like, Tim Minear,
it is what you deserve.
Thank you for giving me this gift. I will use it responsibly. It won't humble me or you at all. We won't be humbled by this. If anything, I think we'll just be emboldened.
Yeah. We're going to continue to believe that we are the smartest people on earth.
Yeah, I think we'll continue to know that.
Yes.
And I think in doing so, we should start making some sweeping demands.
Ooh, yeah. Tim Minear, if you're listening, which we know you are.
Which we know you are.
Just know that, like, there's only one way to end this. And I think you and I, we both know exactly what that is. And if you're so inclined to not deliver, we have methods to exert pressure on you.
It's like Ethel Cain, like tweeting out, like Donald Trump, step down or I will rally the Amish, like that sort of thing.
Like, did she say that?
We'll rally the buddies. Yeah, she did say that. It's something like that on her Instagram story.
Good for,
you know,
her.
She's always saying some stuff. But I'm just like I want to say to Tim and to RG and O'Stark, if you guys are listening, which we also know you are, remember the six hallowed words Jane said so bravely in her video. We need to make Eddie gay.
Truer words have never been spoken by myself. And I think everybody needs to, they're words to live by.
Do you think the ghost of Shannon Diaz was looking down on this episode? Like,
I think she was at peace. Yeah.
But do we want to introduce the topic of this bonus episode?
Well, yes. We just wanted to come on here and make a little bonus episode, seeing as some people have been asking what we are thinking about this season, and specifically the most recent episode of season 8. And also, like, we have been anxious to talk about it. So we wanted to, you know, hopefully before we release our next episode, get out a few of our thoughts for the people. Give the people what they want.
This is so comradical.
Yeah. We are public servants, basically.
I haven't cheered that hard watching an episode as I did when Tommy said, like, my ex, Abby Clark.
I was like, as he was saying it, because, you know, he kind of starts to describe it and you're just getting it in your head like, oh my God, is this what I think it is? Yeah. And then it is. I was watching this episode with my mom. I mean, I told you, but these people don't know. These people, our listeners,
These fucking people, Jesus.
That my mommy has been watching the show this season and now, like, wants to watch the episodes with me, which is great. And I love watching stuff with my mom, for the record. However, I do feel like it makes me a little more, like, self-conscious as I'm watching, because I am such a big fan and I'm into, like, the shipping and stuff, that you know, sometimes it's a little more comfortable to, like, be able to have your reactions by yourself. And so I felt a little embarrassed, like, but at this point in the episode I was like struggling to try to, like, explain to her what was happening and, like, why I was excited. I had to wait for the commercial break, I think.
Yeah, we're not going to do, like, a beat-by-beat, I guess, breakdown of the episode. I mean, if you want beat-by-beat reactions to it, you can literally just go back through our Twitter history when we were, like, tweeting, like, absolute goddamn fucking madmen, because we were both watching this live.
Yeah, we have been live tweeting. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at FirstRespodcast, we live tweet the new episodes.
It was a crazy live tweet sesh.
It was.
Like, that was just really raw and honest. I'm also looking through our texts. I'm not going to, say anything, but, like we did it, Joe. Like, you know. And, like, it felt perfectly architected for us, on a lot of levels.
So once they started talking about Glee, I was like, wait a minute. I was like, I know, wait, like, mathematically, timeline-wise, it's impossible that they could have listened to our podcast first. But I was like, I feel like we have been communicating with them telepathically, because, like, how else do you explain this?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's easy to explain, which is that half the people who work on this show also worked on Glee. But it felt so perfectly tailored to us.
So perfectly tailored. It was, I mean, it was absolutely insane. Like, it really felt like all of the pieces, like, that we, like, wanted were, like, falling into place. And also just, like, a bit of bones thrown our way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know,
we were getting the
Glee references, you know, which were very validating, of course, as Glee always is. We were getting, like, you know, just, like, the stuff about, like, Tommy and Abby. Like it coming off, like... like, even better than, like, I, like, imagined that scene playing out, personally. Like, yeah. We were getting Buck Tommy Bones. We were getting...
I have to say, the Tommy and Abby thing becoming canon, that has to be, like, exclusively because of fans, right? Like, I'm not trying to be overly confident in my own, you know, I'm not trying to overestimate our fandom influence, but, like, the way that, no offense to Tim Minear, but like, this was not planned from the beginning. Like, I think we can say that comfortably. Like, this was not when they introduced Abby having an ex named Tommy, they did not like have Lou Ferrigno Jr. on lock planning for him to appear in season 2 and then come back in season 7, right? This was not premeditated. I think we can just say that. And if they ever claim it was, I think it'll be like when J.K. Rowling tried to say that, like, she had always meant for Dumbledore to be gay or whatever. Right. Like, when she used to do that thing when she'd say, like, actually, I had this random plot point in Fantastic Beasts planned out for 20 years. And you'd be like, no way did you do that, girl.
I'm like, I'm of two minds about it. Because, like, on the one hand, like, yes, like, I very much, like, want to, like, claim in our power, like, this is because of us. This is what we did. And, you know, Tim's listening to us and the cast is listening to us and yada yada yada.
I wasn't also saying, like our podcast literally. I was saying,
like the fandom, yeah. But, like, thinking about the timeline, I'm just, like, thinking, like, okay, so they introduce Abby, she has an ex named Tommy, and then Abby gets written off in season 2, and then in season 2 in flashbacks, we're introduced to a character named Tommy.
So you think it's possible that it could have been planned from season 2?
I think it's possible that they could have had the idea and, like, just meant it as, like, a little Easter egg, or, like, maybe, like, just, like, even just an in-group for the writer's room. And when they brought Tommy back and they paired him up with Buck, maybe they just saw the opportunity to actually do something with that and sat on it for a little bit.
I don't quite buy it. I think more likely, like, Occam's razor, you know, the simplest explanation, they happened to, you know, they had a throwaway, not even a character, just throwaway lines about a guy named Tommy. It's a pretty nondescript name, right? And then they introduce a Tommy later, you know, they bring him back later, not even thinking of that dialogue. But Tim Minear, you know, maybe lurks around on Twitter a little bit. I don't know. Maybe somewhere online.
Certainly on Facebook, he's very active.
Sees that fans have made this connection. Or, I mean, it could have been organic on his part, too. Like, it could have been he's going back and looking at old episodes and realizes that they had written about a Tommy who was dating Abby, right? Like, maybe it wasn't fan-related, but more like they realized there was that connection. But I do not buy that it was planned before this season, personally.
Okay. That's fair. No, that's fair. I don't know. I really like the idea of, like, it just being, like, a little in joke that, like, when the stars aligned, they because, like, I would be more willing to believe that if his name was, like, John or something, you know, like, even if they just named him Tom or Thomas or something. But just, I feel like Tommy is just a specific nickname. It's a thing.
I think you're maybe underestimating how popular of a name Tommy is.
Maybe I just haven't met enough guys named Tommy. I don't know. When was the last time I met
Tommy Lee Jones? Tommy.
Yep.
Let me just Google the name Tommy and see what comes up.
Famous Tommies.
Tommy Wiseau. Hey.
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Hilfiger. Tommy Lee, Tommy Bahama.
Tommy Bahama, right, yeah. And then I don't know the rest of these guys.
Ooh, Tommy Tallarico, the
Tommy Tallarico,
the video game, yep. The guy with the Guinness Book of World Records record for most video game soundtracks.
Mm-hmm. His mother's very proud.
Very real world record. Yeah, his mother's very proud.
13 Reasons Why's own Tommy Dorfman.
Oh my God, yes. That's several Tommies right there.
So there's Tommy Lee and Tommy Lee Jones. So there's two Tommy Lees. Okay, I don't know why I thought Tommy Lee Jones was the guy from Motley Crue.
There are two Tommy Lees who are famous, and you're saying it's so unreasonable that there could
Tommy
be two.
Tommy Ramone. Okay. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, it's not a weird name, in my opinion.
No, it's not. It's not a weird name. I just forget about it because my uncle's name, not my uncle, my grandpa's name is Tom. So I just default to Tom if I'm thinking like.
No, Tom and Thomas are probably still more popular, but like not out of the question for there to be a few Tommies out there. I do have to say, as much as we enjoyed some parts of this episode, I actually wasn't that into everything in the episode. Like. I'm glad with where we ended up, but I wasn't crazy about the journey the whole time.
Yeah. The calls were like, I mean, the call where like the little kid got stuck in the pipe. I mean, I felt that was just kind of like tired a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the calls were pretty good. I did think that was not nearly as dramatic as I thought it was going to be. And it's not because I needed it to be some big dramatic like Eddie callback thing, which is what some fans were kind of predicting it would be, because it does feel like a real callback to the well rescue in season 3. But I guess it's interesting that it's kind of like their climactic call of the episode, and it like doesn't even really feel as high stakes as like the opening call of the episode.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Josh's little speech?
Not great, Ryan. Not great. It's like, so I totally get the thing that this scene was trying to express. And if anything, I hate to say it, but it kind of feels like, you know, the person who was writing this episode kind of wanted an excuse to like give this speech, you know?
Yeah.
But didn't really work. It didn't really fit into this story, in my opinion. And if anything, it comes off kind of annoying because, you know, Josh gives him this speech about like, Well, Buck comes to Josh and Maddie, and he's like, you know, I thought I knew Tommy, and now knowing that Abby had an ex who really hurt her, like, I'm kind of weirded out by the fact that that was the guy I'm dating now, and, like, I didn't really think of him as someone who would, like, be cruel like that. Josh says, listen. Josh says,
he said, listen up, you little faggot. Sorry.
He says, there is a post-Glee world and a pre-Glee world. And any gay people who had to come out in the pre-Glee world had it way harder than the post-Glee world. And I get what he's getting at here, and I actually kind of thought he was spitting at first.
Mm-hmm.
But also, as some people pointed out, which I didn't even think of when I was first watching the episode, Tommy and Abby would have been dating in what, like 2016, 2017?
Yeah. When he came Glee out was in like 2017,
already
Glee was over.
Aired. It was over. That was like literally the definition of the post-Glee world.
Like, it was so late, Riverdale had started airing.
Tommy was not coming out in the pre-Glee world. He was coming out in the post-Riverdale world.
Yeah. Did he mean like he was coming of age in the pre-Glee world? Because even like,
I don't fucking know. So was Buck, you know?
Like, even taking that into consideration, we did it. We had Queer as Folk. We had, you know, RuPaul. We had queer things to look at. And, like, I get it. It was a more homophobic time. But it's like, fucking, like, bro, you're in California.
I also saw someone weighing in on Twitter saying, like, bitch, you should be thanking Harvey Milk.
Literally.
Like, why are we talking about this? Like, well, I mean, we know why they're talking about this. Like, Ryan Murphy is the savior of all gays. It's because he probably came into that writer's room like to visit the set. And he's like, hey, sure you put some praise for my properties in this episode.
I'm getting a lot of heat from my Menendez show. So if you could just, you know, throw me a bone,
literally,
that'd be great.
Oh, my God. What if this was damage control?
It's like, okay, he needs some good PR stat.
And I mean, especially when that thing about Keke Palmer just came out.
Oh, my God. And you know it was totally Lea Michele. And the fucking, the shit Ryan Murphy said to her too.
Yeah.
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 Oh, anyway, my God.
He's a terrible man.
He's a terrible man. Unfortunately, I do ride for him. So that's,
unfortunately, he makes damn entertaining TV.
Yeah, that's our cross to bear, I suppose. But
he's a disgusting slime at the same time.
Yes. Yes. In other words, he is a television Hollywood man.
Exactly. He's a king of showbiz.
King of showbiz.
But Josh gives this speech where he's like, you basically cannot judge Tommy for his actions during this relationship with Abby because, I mean, he implies, like, you know, he's your gay elder who had to deal with more than you, so you can't judge him for this. And then, you know, the scene ends on, like, this triumphant note of, like, Josh really showed it to Buck, you know?
Yeah.
And I just felt like, okay, so I get what they're getting at here. I get the sentiment. I do. However, like, just because someone is on their journey and maybe struggling a lot with that stuff still doesn't mean that they couldn't have hurt the person who was also in that relationship, yeah. You know? And it also doesn't mean that Buck doesn't have a right to be weirded out by that, I would say.
Yeah. Like, my entire thing going into this scene was, like, I didn't even read this as, like, Buck judging Tommy for, like, the things he did when he was in the closet. You know what I mean? I really went into this like thinking, like, Buck was weirded out because, like, he hasn't, you know, shared a partner with another partner before, and, like, you know, he villainized Tommy so much during his relationship with Abby, and now he's finding out new information that, like, completely puts his entire perspective on its head. I thought Josh was actually really out of line when he gave Buck this speech.
Too. Terrible advice.
Really terrible advice. And, like, I get it. Like, as, like, you know, a gay person who has, you know, had, you know, many, like, conversations with, you know, my queer elders and has had very meaningful connections with, you know, older queer people and everything, like, I just gotta say, like, I mean, like, we've been around for a while, and, like, I don't think not having glee is an excuse to, you know, emotionally, you know, I don't want to overstate the harm, but just, like, like emotionally damage an intimate partner, like,
yeah,
you know, it's not an excuse.
Yeah, no, and we're not trying to say that Tommy is, like, some horrible monster, despite what the fandom will have you believe.
Yeah.
Because I also want to talk about this later. I want to also touch on this whole, not debate, but just sort of the discourse around Tommy and how we feel about that. But I'm not even trying to say that Tommy was, like, necessarily in the wrong with Abby. Like, we don't know what happened. And actually, that's one of my problems with the episode, is I feel like you're waiting to get some clarity about that, and it just doesn't come, because to me, that's what the crux of the conflict feels like it's about. It's like, Buck is uncomfortable, and not because he's not capable of understanding Tommy's actions as, like, a gay closeted person at the time, but because he feels like he got the impression that Abby was hurt by this person, and he has only heard that side of the story. So, like, if I was Buck's friend trying to give him advice in that moment, I would be like, you should probably talk to him and ask, because it sounds like you need to get some clarity to figure out if, like, you can reconcile your feelings of respect for Abby with, like, your feelings of respect for Tommy. And instead of that, Josh gives him that weird ass speech, and Buck never gets that clarity. And they never really actually just sit down and talk about, like, here's what happened from my point of view, you know?
No, they don't. Like, it's like the death of their communication just in this scene, basically.
And I mean, the whole impression is that if they were together for 6 months and they hadn't even, like, discussed their exes at all.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, how well do they know each other?
Like, we know how formative of an ex Abby is for Buck. Like, it's kind of his whole thing. You'd think that would be like a third date conversation, to be honest. Like, oh, I was in this really formative relationship with an older woman when I was younger, and it, like, sobered me up and made me a better person. I don't know. Is that crazy to say early on?
It really calls their like entire relationship into question, like how intimate they were with each other, how well they knew each other. Like I'm like thinking, like, did they even have sex? How far did this go? They were together for 6 months. That's like a major thing.
Oh God, I was like, that was one of my first like jaw dropping moments of the episode. Honestly, was just that reveal that it was their 6 month anniversary, because I was like, ain't no way. Seen of them on the show up to this point was a couple that's been together for 6 months. Because another thing I wanted to talk about, even before this episode aired, I wanted us to talk about, like, whenever we get to a season 8 discussion, the way that. Like, I knew they were going to broke up. I knew they were going to break up because it was starting to feel conspicuous to me the level of non-romantic the show was depicting them as being with each other. Because in that Halloween episode, my God.
Oh, my God.
I was like, do the actors hate each other? Does somebody have COVID? Are we socially distancing again? Like, why are they not allowed to even stand, like, closer than 5 feet apart from each other?
Tommy was making his bed up on the couch in that episode.
Tommy's sleeping on the couch.
I was thinking to myself, like, have you never slept in the same fucking bed before?
Literally. There's so many things in that scene that are so weird. It's like...
it's like he's got a bro.
Yeah.
It's like a bromance. I mean,
Tommy is making up his bed on the couch. He's telling Buck, he's like, Buck, you need to get rest, like, so that you can heal up from your shoulder injury. Buck is apparently going to spend the night on, like, his armchair, which it's like, even if for some reason you're not at the point where you're sharing a bed together, why is Buck not taking the couch? Like, if you're going to sleep in the living room, or why isn't Buck in bed and Tommy on the couch if you're not going to sleep together? But most importantly, why aren't they sleeping in the same bed? Presumably, at the Halloween episode, that was what, like 5 months into their relationship? That was a weirdo, weirdo scene to me where I was like, okay, something is up here. Like, why? They don't even kiss in that episode.
I thought the implication was that Buck... I thought, like, the excuse that they were going with was that Buck needed, like, the lumbar support or whatever from the chair while his arm was healing or something like that. Like, he couldn't, like, lie down on it properly lest he risk, like rolling over on it or something like that.
I don't know, man.
but, like, that, I mean, honestly, like, I mean, they locked it back into place and he didn't complain about his arm for the rest of the episode. So, like, that just seems like some bullshit. If anything, I, like, think, like, I've been hearing whispers. I've been hearing whispers. That one of the actors in that pairing was a little reticent to do some physical boy-on-boy romance.
I've been hearing whispers of that, too.
And it wasn't Oliver.
I don't know what to believe. I'm seeing a lot of, like, and this is, I guess, getting into the Tommy discourse. I am seeing, for months, I've been seeing so many, like, rumors and fandom truths swirling. Yeah. There are people who are, like, convinced that the actor Lou Ferrigno Jr. is, like, a conservative, that he's, like, a Trump supporter. There are people convinced that the whole cast hate him and he hates them back or something. There are people who think he's homophobic, that he's, like, racist. And I have to say, from what I can tell, this is based almost entirely on vibes and not on any actual facts. And I'm not saying, like, I don't know, you know, none of us know, but I feel like... you know, sorry to play the devil's advocate. I think we should not be taking rumors like that and running with them, 911 fandom. It's really weird to me. And I just think it's a dangerous road to go down. And,
I know
it's fun to speculate. And I know people have strong feelings about the character. And it's fine to have strong feelings about the character. But, like, the actor is just a guy. And he's really, like... it's just weird to, and people like call him ugly all the time. He's just a guy. I really don't think that's called for in any way.
Even if he is in his Tristan actor from Degrassi era on, like, in private or whatever, like obviously there are a lot of things we're not privy to, and, like, even if he was those things, he's not the final boss of any of those things that people say that he is. And B, like, what does his physical appearance have to do with any of that?
Exactly. And I am constantly combating this because I just hate the way so many people are so comfortable with, like, even if he, which, you know, again, to stress it, we do not even know if he's a bad person, but like, if he was, it would still not be okay to bully him for his looks, because way too many people are comfortable doing that. And I think all it does is legitimize a correlation between physical attractiveness and morality, which I think is a really, really dangerous road to go down. Like, to taken to its most extreme ends, that's like Nazi shit, you know? I just think people need to cool it with that. But I guess I was interested in talking about this because there's been so much Lou Ferrigno Jr. bullying recently. And I'm not even saying, like, some people have said that he's, like, been irresponsible about fostering, like, a parasocial relationship with all these crazed Buck Tommy fans. And there's probably, maybe there's some fairness to that. But even then, to play devil's advocate again, I feel like even then, I'm not sure he's really done anything that wrong. I think it's really, you know, people point out the fact apparently he's, like, been doing cameos with fans, like, which, if anybody doesn't know, is like an app where people can pay you to, like, record a little video for them.
The scandal. I got the scandal of cameo.
I'm like, I'm sorry, but honestly, if I suddenly got all this crazy attention on me for no reason, like, would you not also try to cash in?
Yeah. Like I feel like it's not like
he's blame him for trying to get his bag.
He's not doing cameos for free, right? And he's not fucking, what's her name? Miranda Sings going into, like, Discord channels and group chats with her fans and being like, hey, girl, what's the tea and everything? Like, he's doing it for money. Like, people buy the cameos, you know? And, like, he's been a working actor for years. He's in his late 30s to early 40s. I don't know how old he is.
I think he's about 40.
About 40, right. And he's been, like, a working actor that whole time. I feel like once you suddenly get an influx of attention because you're on a popular TV show as a sort of a major supporting character for an arc, like, I feel like you're allowed to be excited about that. The only reason I even bring the, like, the Lou rumors up is because of, like, an interview that Oliver like gave where he said that kiss scene took like 30 takes because
I did see this. He does make it sound like Lou Ferrigno Jr. was like a little uncomfortable with doing the kiss, which is that's like the worst that you could say about him.
And it wasn't even more physical, but Lou wanted to rein it in a bit. And like, I feel like if anything, like, the reason, like, we should talk about that is because it does kind of damage the relationship, because it makes it feel very platonic. It makes it feel very chaste. And it, like, desexualizes, and obviously not everything has to be super sexualized, but I mean, we're talking about sexuality here, like a sexual awakening for Buck. Like, it desexualizes it. It basically puts like a chastity belt on like a
on our most
this
sexual
relationship.
Character, frankly.
Yes, on our most sexual character. I mean, Buck's whole fucking thing. During Buck 1.0, when he was introduced. And, like there's a double standard, too, because, like, we got sex scenes with Taylor, you know, we got, you know, Buck, you know, doing every girl in the greater LA area, and the minute he has a relationship with a man, it's suddenly like, oh, it's like a bromance.
Right, and that's what I found particularly puzzling about that Halloween episode and stuff was, like, I was thinking back to, at first I was like, am I being unreasonable? Like, you know, it's not like they have to be like making out constantly for me to know they're in a relationship. But then I was thinking back to, you know, we would see like Buck and Taylor like in bed together sometimes, or like cuddling or whatever on the couch. It's like that was part of their relationship. And it's a very normal thing to show in a TV relationship. So I was feeling pretty good prior to this episode in terms of like, I don't think this is possibly going to last, just with like the signals they are sending on screen. And also, like, not to dwell on the Halloween episode, but let's be real, every single Buck and Tommy scene, except for that one in the apartment where they're inexplicably not sleeping in the same bed, every other scene with them, Eddie is just in the background, like, more connected to Buck than Tommy is.
Yeah. It's like, it makes it very clear that, like, if anything, like Tommy is the one that lifts right out of the relationship. Meanwhile, Buck and Eddie are just still sitting there going strong.
Yeah.
And so when we get to episode 6, and that's exactly what happens, where does Buck end up? But with Eddie in his little undies and his little tighty whities, sitting on the couch, drinking some beer, and he's looking like he's about to kill himself.
Yes. Cracking open a cold one with the boys in a depressed way.
Yeah. In a depressed way.
So yeah, I didn't love the Josh speech part of it. And then the breakup itself, like I said, I just felt like they didn't really get to the heart of the matter. Like, I would have preferred, actually, as I was watching that breakup scene, at first I was worried, right? Because I was like, oh no, it's going to be a thing where like they had this conflict, but then they're going to come out the other side stronger. But that didn't end up happening. As Tommy starts to look weirded out, what I thought maybe would happen is maybe Buck would have been able to get over the Abby thing, but then there's sort of a reversal, and Tommy is actually, when he finds out they both shared an ex, suddenly he's uncomfortable with it. And I thought, oh, maybe that'll be the way this relationship ends. And it's like, not that that would have been perfect, but I feel like it would have been slightly more of like a wrap it up in a bow kind of ending of
that,
like,
would have been cool. It would have brought to full circle his comment about like her shacking up with some himbo half her age,
right? Maybe it's like he's never really respected this idea of Abby's next partner that she had, and then when he finds out that's Buck, it's like hard for him to reconcile. But then they take it to a weirder place where Buck, you know, impulsively asks Tommy to move in with him, which is a classic certified Buck move. And Tommy decides, kind of out of thin air, he's like, well, I can tell for some reason that this relationship isn't going to last because you're just into me because this is like new for you because I'm your first boyfriend. Yeah. And there's no way this is going to last. I'm not your last. I'm your first. So I'm going to break up with you now. And I get the thing of like, I thought that was kind of insightful. The thing of like, oh, you're not actually that into me. You're into like the excitement of this new side of yourself and like being with a man for the first time. But I wish like if that was going to be the conclusion, like maybe the episode, their arc should have been about that. It just felt a little messy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree. And, you know, to be frank, like, I on the one hand, like, emotionally, I kind of got what Tommy was driving at. Like, I did like that line where he said, I'm not your last, I'm your first. You know, I liked that line specifically because I thought there was a lot of truth to it. And because, like, I thought it was sort of recognizing sort of like a truism about this relationship, but also about how just relationships in these kinds of shows play out in general, you know. And so like with this, it was almost like the show was like setting the bullshit aside and talking to us straight, but it just felt very unearned given that that wasn't what the conflict was about at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, thinking about it now, I feel like they could have tied it all together had the Josh scene been better, you know. I feel like they should not have taken, again, it feels like they kind of just wanted an opportunity to like share that message of like your gay elders went through a hard time, and like I get it, but again, I don't think it was applicable to this situation. I feel like if they wanted to tie it together, I really thought when Josh is asking Buck all those questions, he's like asking him these things like, do you like know each other? Like, do you think about him when he's not there? I kind of thought Buck would be like, actually, no. And then it would be like, it sounds like you don't even really know each other that well. Like, maybe. Yeah. And then that could have tied into later this whole thing of like, oh, you weren't actually into me as a person. You were into like the novelty of this type of relationship. And that would have tied it all up nicely. But no. Yeah. Buck kind of answers yes to all that those questions, even if not very enthusiastically, I must say.
Like, you got there was some internal conflict with Buck with his answers, but
you got that from the performance, but not really from the script, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so, like, it's like you said, you know, they started off strong with that scene, and they had potential, but they just chose, like, the weirdest direction to go with it. They took the far right, they're like, not the far, but, like, the hard turn into like just a completely different lane. It's like, what the fuck are you guys even talking about? This is not where this was going.
Yeah, that doesn't really apply. I mean, I'm not blaming Josh because Josh didn't fucking write this episode. I think it's a weird choice on the part of the writer.
Yeah. Didn't they say the writer for this episode was the same one who wrote some major Buddy episodes?
I'm pretty sure he wrote the Eddie Gets Shot episode, but let me look it up.
I thought Kristen Riedel wrote that.
I think she wrote the finale, so the ensuing episode, not the one where he actually gets... Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she wrote, again, I can't believe there are buddy shippers who hate Kristen Riedel for, like, mm-hmm. not being a buddy shipper, when she literally gave us some of the most amazing buddy moments. Like, you guys just hate women.
A fandom hating women? No.
No. It's more likely than you think.
It's more likely than you think. Do you want to talk about Eddie?
Let's talk about Eddie, baby.
your favorite character. This is our first time talking about him on this podcast.
My distaste for Eddie Diaz has been greatly exaggerated. I love Eddie. I love Eddie. He's my little baby, sweet boy. And anyone who doesn't get that, they just don't get it. It's like the girls who get it. And the girls who don't.
Yeah.
I can love Eddie and also be critical of all of the times he has terrorized women in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sometimes a man hurts every woman who enters his life because his true soulmate is a man.
Is a man. Is that a line from something or did you write that?
No, it's from like a TikTok. You know that guy with the scary eyes who used to go viral on TikTok, like the guy with the big blue eyes?
See, I'm not on TikTok.
I ain't never seen two pretty best friends.
No.
It's always one of them who's got to be ugly. You know,
I've never seen this guy. What?
Oh my God. This was a huge meme at the time.
Well, first of all, that guy's wrong because of Eddie and Buck.
He's just wrong about that. They are the pretty best friends.
We found them.
No, he would just make these TikToks where he like looks directly at the camera with these huge blue eyes and like say he would just like read off. I think they were probably not even his content. I think they were probably like memes or tweets he had found. He'll just like read off these platitudes. Mm-hmm. And anyway, one of them was that.
I found this article on a website called Fangirlish. Called An Ode to Eddie Diaz's Mustache on 911.
Oh, did I write it?
It was written by Lyra Hale. Oh, member of the Hale family.
Oh my God, member of the Hale family. Not to be confused with Laura Hale.
Right, right.
Who in turn is not to be confused with Cora Hale.
What was the mom's name again?
Talia Hale.
Talia Hale. Right, right, right.
Yeah, Lyra Hale would fit right in. How much you want to bet that's a pen name specifically inspired by Teen Wolf?
I just know for a fact that's someone's like self-insert OC from like the sixth grade. Oh, I'm obsessed with this. This line. He doesn't believe in fate, destiny, or any of the jinx-like stuff his found family at the 118 does. And over the years, he's cultivated a presence that wouldn't necessarily take a risk. Like a mustache. But he did.
Beautiful. See, okay, this isn't really a problem that I have. It's just something that personally I find unfortunate because I love the mustache so much. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate to me that they had to have the mustache be explained away as like something Eddie's doing to mask himself and be inauthentic. Because like, I love the mustache. I want the mustache to stay. I don't want the mustache to be like a negative thing.
Yeah, no, the mustache, because like, it looks so good. It's just, I think they had to because it makes him even gayer.
I know, it's like if you want gay Eddie, leave the mustache.
Leave the mustache. He looks like a fucking member of the
fucking-
He looks like he walked
out of the Village People.
Of the Village People. He looks like he likes him to stay and Cowboy at the YMCA. Buck.
Him and Cowboy Buck are staying at the YMCA.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They had to be a macho man. There's this one line in this article. Sorry, I'm not going to read the article like on here, but like go look at it because it's gold. But it's just a picture of him and Gerard scolding him, and it just has the caption: "Remember when we stared down authority together?"
Wow. I wish I had like had any Halloween plans this year because I totally would have gone as Eddie's mustache.
Oh
to
my
Halloween.
God. To gay Halloween. That one.
I hate gay Halloween. What do you mean you're Eddie's mustache?
That would have been
like
so
sexy
fucking
Eddie's
good.
Mustache. Like you're just sexy wearing like a little bodysuit, but then you're a mustache.
Yeah, it's like that line from Mean Girls. Like, what are you? I'm Eddie's mustache. Duh. Points at your upper
See
lip.
See the mustache?
And of course, you know, like he shaves it off after, you know, the talk with the gay priest who returns, mm-hmm. as everyone was
once again,
was hoping
do we know
he would.
He's gay, or are we just assuming that? Oh wait, no, yeah, because of his Katy Perry ringtone. And I mean, he was kind of flirting with Eddie in this episode.
Oh, he totally was. No, if anything, this episode just made him gayer. And like he was getting nervous when Eddie was in that cutoff shirt and everything, but
I think gay priest should break his vow of celibacy to be Eddie's first and then Buck can be his last.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
Come on, that's the arc I'm gonna write. Tim Minear, listen up.
Thruple, but then the priest gets misgivings and rejoins the cloth, leaving Buddy together.
I don't know about even thruple, but just like, you know, dramatic storyline with the priest. Suddenly we shift to hot priest POV for like an entire like 10 episode arc where he's struggling with his faith. And he eventually rejoins the priesthood.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, honestly, this show has done every other storyline, so why not?
Yeah, come on. Eventually, you're going to run out of ideas, and you're going to have to start giving in-depth storylines to the hot priest.
Yeah, it's like when The Simpsons started doing Mo episodes. Like, you know, it's like, well, let's get all these side characters. Can we bring Carla back? Like,
yeah.
You know, what's your favorite guy in the world, Michael, doing? Like... No, and then of course Eddie shaves it off, and then finally we are graced with Ryan Guzman dancing on this show in an amazing pitch perfect homage to the Scientology daddy Tom Cruise in Risky Business.
Yes, it's like the priest told him to stop punishing himself and just do something fun. And I guess that is Eddie Diaz's idea of fun.
Fucking, like,
love that for him.
Like, I didn't, I mean, Eddie, first of all, didn't really seem like the type to own tidy whities.
I would not know. I don't pretend to know the underwear wearing habits of men. But,
I know. I just like, I feel like he's the kind of guy to like walk out and he's got like those like loose boxers on. And like, I saw this tweet that was like, it was like just like a guy wearing like loose boxers, like blue check boxers, and the caption was like, when he's got these, you know, the dick is toxic. Like,
see, I have no idea what any of those words mean. But I'll take your word for it.
This is my contribution as as a gay man in a predominantly sapphic space. I'm not trying to grab the mic or anything. I'm just trying to bring some of our culture
into this
conversation.
I'm here for you.
The sapphic perspective on this, please.
I like the mustache, and I wish I could grow one just like it.
Yeah.
It's actually the reason I keep talking about the mustache is because I think I have Freudian mustache envy.
Mustache envy. Oh, that's really good.
I ordered some books recently. I ordered some books recently by Rita Mae Brown. Do you know her? She was like a, or is, she's not dead, a lesbian feminist author. And
I do not. Rita Mae Brown.
She has this novel called Venus Envy, which Venus. I think is like the most genius title ever.
No, it's fantastic.
I'm very excited to read it.
The dancing made me very happy.
Yes, a long time coming, that dancing.
I love seeing this man dance. I really do. He moves in a very compelling way. It's like once he like shuts his mouth and like whether he starts moving his feet or picks up a paintbrush, it's like I start to see like the real man that he is.
Yeah. Oh, it's like he's free of any social, like, pressure, and he can just be himself uninhibited.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Speaking of which, I need to rewatch Step Up All In, because that is, like, one of my favorite movies I watched this year. It's the best one.
Oh my god. Okay, so you know I haven't seen any of the Step Up movies, right? So can I watch that one without context?
Oh, yeah. Each one is pretty much a standalone movie. The first one is, you know, Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan, and it's actually the first one is like quite good, I think, like just competent. The second one is okay. The third one is pretty bad in my opinion. The fourth one is awful. That's the first one to star Ryan Guzman, and as much as I love Ryan, the fourth one is very bad. It's the first one that feels like a true B movie, like a direct-to-video movie, even though it was released theatrically. And then the fifth one, Step Up All In, is surprisingly like sort of a return to form, in my opinion, like the sixth season of Glee, where it kind of takes a more like irreverent, funny tone, and it kind of starts in an interesting way where Ryan Guzman's character is now like after the high of at the end of the last movie, like winning the big dance competition at the beginning of the fifth one, he's like all down on his luck, and he and his friends like haven't been able to find any dance work in months, and all his friends go and give up. But he like stays, he gets a job at a dance studio. And he if you got to that part in my video where I played the clip from Step Up All In, where
I did.
he says, I live in
I
a
live
freaking
in
little
a
storage
freaking
closet.
little storage closet.
So the context for that line is that when he's looking for a job, he gets a job at a dance studio that includes he needs a place to stay too, so they let him stay, like live in their storage closet.
Oh my
Like,
God.
it is a hilarious movie. It honestly reminds me of like a 1930s like screwball comedy kind of musical where, you know, you have all these down on their luck dancers and there's a lot of like kind of in jokes about the industry. I genuinely think it's so funny, but it's not very connected continuity-wise to the others, except it features Ryan Guzman from the fourth movie, and then the love interest is the girl from the second movie.
Really?
Which is big. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I don't know.
Oh.
I
That's the one with the like surprisingly tasteful duet, like dance duet on that musical ride, right?
Yes. Oh my God. My favorite dance number in the whole movie, the Every Little Step scene. I know it's goofy, like it definitely goofy choreography, goofy setup, but I actually found it like I thought in the larger context of the franchise, it was surprisingly like charming and sweet if you watch it in context.
Okay, so we have closets, we have dance numbers, we have strange line writing and delivery, and we have surprisingly sweet and tender moments.
Yes, this is why you have to watch Step Up All In, you guys.
Was this role not preparing him for the role of Eddie Diaz?
Oh my God, yes. It's true. It's
Wasn't this
true.
not just like the testing grounds for this man?
I honestly think his character is better developed in the movie Step Up All In
Oh
than
my
throughout
God.
7 seasons of 911.
Oh my God.
Dare I say.
Well, okay, but that's all going to change the minute that we get him having his feelings realization, because
No, exactly.
we finally have Eddie actually like addressing sexuality and talking about the topic of sexuality in general. Yes, he's saying I'm straight, but we know he's not. And so that's progress. That's
I
progress.
know. In that moment, watching the episode, I was disappointed when he said that, especially because the Buck and Tommy breakup hadn't happened yet. So it was kind of looking like we were losing, you know? But then the Buck and Tommy breakup happens, Buck goes over there and it ends with them. And you think, like, okay, they know we exist. We know they exist. So it feels
And who's
like.
flying the plane? No,
It feels like Angela Bassett.
Angela.
It feels like a conscious move to tell us that, okay, this is who's left, you know? Like at the end of the day, this is who they have, and it's each other.
Not just telling us, but like showing us so explicitly them sitting on the couch side by side after everything that happened.
Couch theory never dies.
I have never been more sure that Buddy Cannon is coming. I have never
Like,
been
I'm not trying to
more
be
sure.
overly confident. I don't want my hopes to get crushed, but at this point, when it's such a like open secret, you know, like when they've never been more tuned in with the fans in a way, I feel like. I feel like they would be more discouraging, honestly, if they really did not intend to do it.
Yeah, that'd be like the fucking Supernatural guys. They'd be fucking discouraging it at every turn.
Yeah, yeah, right? Or like Teen Wolf or whatever.
Oh, absolutely, like Teen Wolf, you know?
So like the fact that at this point, after, you know, they did kind of distance themselves from it for a while when they were still on Fox and it was looking like not an option. But now, like ever since this moved to ABC, like it's in the air, you know?
Yeah.
The atmosphere is, it reeks of buddy canon in here.
Yeah. Something shifted. And I just like, I just want to talk about like
there's been a shift.
That last shot of them on the couch, obviously, you know, like they're both in their sort of divergent emotional states. Eddie's riding this sort of manic high, like he's finally feeling like kind of unburdened of this like sort of like this guilt and this shame that he's been carrying around, deservedly so.
Yeah.
Feeling guilty and shameful of what he did. Not guilty about some of it. not deservedly so, feeling he's unburdened, because I honestly, I feel like he hasn't earned that yet. But
it's like, I just think he's focused on the wrong things. It's like he doesn't have to feel guilty or ashamed for just like who he is and the feelings he feels. He maybe should feel a little bit of guilt for some of the women he's whose lives he's destroyed.
When we critique Eddie, we critique action. We critique actions. And then he's feeling this sort of like this manic rush of energy, this great sort of relief. Meanwhile, Buck's just sitting there. I mean, like that one tweet put it best.
He's sucking on that beer bottle like it's his binky.
Yeah, like I'm trying to find the exact wording. The line was literally just like, he about to kill himself, and then quote tweet, like, bro, take a breath.
Yeah. The way he is just gulping down that beer. Listen, we've all been there.
And meanwhile, Eddie's just fucking like twisting the top off. And of course, the phallic symbol.
The phallic symbol. I mean, we've talked about Freud on this podcast before, and this time is no different. It's very overt, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If we're talking like language of cinema.
But do we want to just like do a brief tour of some of our favorite favorite tweets?
Oh my god.
Do you have your Twitter pulled up?
I do. So I have to say, again, where I was kind of going with the Tommy thing earlier is, as much as I often am actually kind of more sympathetic to like the maybe Buck Tommy side and the Lou Ferrigno Jr. side than the average buddy shipper, I have to say I became more torn after this week, because I started to see some wild fan behavior from the Buck Tommy side that I was not aware was brewing in there. So now I'm kind of like, you know, I feel a little less bad. I feel like, okay, maybe there was actually crazy toxicity on both sides. And I'm not saying, I still don't think that justifies like bullying Lou Ferrigno Jr. or anything, but like some of these fans are pretty bad too.
Yeah. I was seeing some absolutely crazy shit being said about Oliver, being said about Ryan, being said about Tim, about the network, about like a lot of stuff.
Yeah. They think that people were watching this show exclusively for Tommy. And it's like, oh, like what world have you been living in?
It's like, oh, I don't know what that would even be equivalent to. I mean, it'd be like watching Supernatural, like just to get to like, I don't know, like season whatever, where it's revealed that the guy who writes the books is God, and just watching it for him.
Even that feels like too big of a character to compare.
Yeah, but it is literally God. That's true. Maybe it's like watching Supernatural just for Ruby. The demon that Sam dated in season 4.
Yeah, honestly. Like just a random love interest, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, seriously. Hashtag let Buck fuck, of course.
Of course. Well, yeah, so as for the like bad Buck Tommy fan behavior, one of the things that I'm sure there are like normal fans on this side for sure. And to be clear, I would never make fun of anyone who's just like sad that their ship didn't work out. Like, I think that's totally fine and normal. But there were some people who started like bullying Oliver Stark, who plays Buck, because he had like given an interview shortly after the episode saying that like now that Buck's single, he kind of wants him to like explore his sexuality by like hooking up with people.
Yeah.
And they were trying to spin that as biphobic, which like the vast majority of fans are like, be serious, that is not biphobic. And like Oliver Stark has been so outspoken with like advocacy and like being so respectful and interested and in a way that is not typical, I would say. So yeah. I feel like it's so unfair to like try and jump on him for
he's
like...
He's really into the queerness of Buck. He's really, really into it. Like really mm-hmm. into it. And like a really normal, respectful way too. He's just like, he's just mm-hmm. really proud to represent this. And so like
yeah.
just like sort of lording that over him, I think is actually really inappropriate. This next tweet inspired me to go on AO3 and search some things, and I already found some things that I'll read later. It's big shout out to everyone on AO3 writing Buddy fucking nasty on the couch after 806 fixed. Thank you all for your service. That was by at Buddy Slut. So shout out to you.
Shout out to you at Buddy Slut.
From a fellow Buddy Slut.
Oh my god, there's this one that's it's like Josh after giving Buck the worst gay relationship advice ever and referencing Glee 5 times in 30 seconds, and it's mm-hmm. that gif from I think Ginny and Georgia where the girl like salutes and then walks away in slow motion. Somebody mentioned, like, in response to a similar thing, they said this is literally the exact kind of dialogue they'd give Kevin Keller on Riverdale.
Oh my god! Oh my god, stop! Stop!
Or, like, seriously, that is, like, the realest thing I've heard about this episode.
Kevin, when Betty, like says she's concerned about his safety because he's cruising while a serial killer is active in the forest.
Oh my god. I have a whole thing where I wanted to make a video at one point called Kevin from Riverdale Bad. Like when I watched Riverdale, because I thought he was such a bad television character.
Oh my god. Oh my god. You have to make that video, if not just because I want to see the look on Casey Cott's face when it comes out. Fascinating things going down at Collider, says at TrendsWriter, and it's right. One day ago, sorry 911 fans, it doesn't seem like the actors see Buddy like you do. And then 1 hour ago, 911 just opened the door for Buck and Eddie.
Right. There are apparently two different writers at Collider who came out with two different articles about Buddy, one pro and one anti on like the same day. So it's like, is this a feud situation or what?
There's internal conflict at Collider.
Yeah.
and we're on the front lines. We're on the front lines. Did you see Pink News, the LGBT news website?
I did.
They tweeted out, they tweeted one of their like social media employees, who like handles their Twitter, tweeted about 911, and like just it was in first person, just like from the corporate account. Is like things we need to happen. 1, Eddie gay. 2, Buddy Cannon. 3, something about ice cream. It's like
it's going mainstream, I'm telling you. Like this is good.
This isn't a family business anymore. This is like we're getting like, you know, national attention. Eddie really saw Buck in the peephole and went, quote, "Hello, bisexual boy best friend. You look depressed. Might the sight of my bare thighs and luscious ass and tighty whiteys help assuage your woes?" And he was right, it did. Said at Shock Chunny. I don't think I said that right.
I was about to quote a tweet by at By Buddies, who says, "I'd like to think that Buck was watching Eddie dance through his living room window for several minutes before he knocked on the door." Someone named Rachel Forch, I think it's pronounced, says something that I think is relevant and important for everyone to remember, which is, "I really don't believe anyone is in a position to dismiss theories from the Buddy fandom after seeing Tommy and Abby and Break Up Green both come true in the same episode."
Yeah.
Because that was another thing. Fans have this whole thing where, like, the stills had come out from this episode and Buck was in his apartment wearing green. And apparently there's this thing where, like, two other times he's broken up with his partners, he's also been wearing green in his loft. So it's like people predicted he's going to break up with that man because he's wearing green. And boom, it came true.
Yeah. I just love this one that's like someone's at, like, I don't know, like a deli or like in a cafeteria or something. And there's like there's water and there's juice for sale. And they just take a picture and they go, "Everything reminds me of him."
So one thing I wanted to bring up, this is why I brought it up, these like kind of deranged posts from some Buck Tommy shippers. And I'm sorry if this comes off as mean-spirited, but just people have been sharing a couple of the like most deranged posts mostly from Tumblr. And I just want to read, like, here's an example of one. This is somebody on Tumblr goes, Buddy's ruined something that was clearly well received by the general public, could have been absolutely needed during these recent dark times of upcoming bigotry by the Trump administration. But I guess toxicity all comes down to a fake ship that will never happen.
Wow.
Oh, baby girl.
Wow.
It's like, I'm not even disputing, like, it's not even the fact that they say it'll never happen. It's not even the flat out lie that Buck and Tommy were clearly well received by the general public. Honestly, the general public, I don't think, gives two shits. It's the assertion that Buck Tommy was like a necessary, it was like what everyone needed for the upcoming darkness of the Trump administration. I think that's like an all-timer kind of deranged fandom sentiment.
What can you say but go outside? Like, I know that's over and I know we can't say that anymore, but like, what can you say but go outside?
What we need during these trying times, Ryan, is two giant white guys who kind of look the same, who are in a boring relationship on network television. God bless America.
As a famous songwriter once wrote, what the world needs now is Buck Tommy, sweet Buck Tommy.
I'm always saying that.
It's the only thing that there's just too little of. And with that, do we want to wrap it up?
We probably should. I'm sure I'll cut out plenty of this, but
yeah. Thank you for listening to our first bonus episode. We just feel like we had to make this, especially given the week we've all had. I think it's officially been 1 week.
Yeah, it has. We're recording this on Tuesday, the 12th. I was going to say our episode coming out on Thursday is one that we recorded on election day.
Yeah.
And we keep joking like, this is our election day special. And I gotta say, Ryan, I think our election day special was a bit of a bust.
Yeah, I think so. Did we do that? Did we do this? Is this our fault?
I had the thought.
Is this our fault, Jane?
I had the thought on Thursday. I was like, wait a minute. What if someone made like a Faustian bargain to have Buddy become canon, and the thing they had to pay with was a second Trump administration?
Yeah. So with that, we'll probably just wrap it up here.
We bid you farewell and Godspeed for this week's episode of 911.
To the Buck Tommies listening to us, I just want you to know, like, you'll get through this.
I kind of doubt we have any hardcore Buck Tommy listeners, but if anyone out there is sympathetic, I would say, again, I think it's totally fine for anyone to feel disappointed if they were into this. And also, I feel like some of the people who were into Buck Tommy, the reason they kind of latched onto that was because they were, like, tired of being strung along by a non-canon ship and just, like, wanted something canon to ship. And I think that's totally normal and understandable.
Yeah.
It's just some people who have been really acting crazy this week. But Buddy shippers act crazy a lot. So, you know, I think there are some bad people on both sides, to paraphrase Donald Trump.
Just a general fandom reminder to everyone listening. Listen, guys, shipping is great. It's not the end of the world.
No,
there's a whole world outside of these fake relationships. It's okay.
And ultimately, I think people should remember that fiction and reality are separate things.
Yep.
And you do not have to take your frustrations with a character or a storyline on a show out on real life actors who don't really have that much to do with what goes down on said show.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, if worse comes to worse, we'll always have fanfic.
Exactly. That's what being a fan is all about.
Yeah.
Making your own reality.
Making your own reality. Just ask me. I'm doing it.
He's doing it.
With that, good night, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Good night and good luck.
Good night and good luck.